This is HPR episode 2888 entitled, Pattern Matching in Haskell, and is part of the series, Haskell. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto, and is about 21 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutorto talks about one of their favorite features in Haskell.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, you're listening to the Hacker Public Radio, and this is Tuturoto talking about pattern matching in Haskell. This is one of those features that when I saw in action, I was completely sold pretty much immediately. So the basic idea is that if value constructors are for making data, then the pattern matching is taking that data apart, roughly. So, simple example. We have a boolean, type boolean, that has two value constructors, true and false. True makes a boolean, and false makes a boolean. They have different data in them. So then if we have a function that takes a boolean as a parameter, we can match against that value constructor. Example, we have a function called bool to string, that takes a bool and returns a string. And we could write it in a way that it uses if inside of it. So bool to string n equals if n, then quotation true end quote, else quote false end quote. So when you call it with a true, it returns true as a string. With a false, it returns false as a string. And the choice was made by the if statement inside of the function. We can remove that if statement by doing pattern matching on the parameter. So the signature is the same, it's still bool to string, but it is written as bool to string true equals quote true end quote. Bool to string false equals quote false end quote. So it looks like there's a two definitions of the function, one for the true and one for the false parameter. But in reality there's a one definition but two cases. So you can have more complex data in the pattern, but it still works in the same way. So for example, if we had a function called isBig that is given a maybe int and it returns a string. So maybe is the data type that has two value constructors. It has nothing and maybe a. So nothing signifies that there is no data available, and just a indicates that there's a value available, and a is whatever type we have declared it to be. In our case, it's the int. So we can match to those two value constructors and write it as a isBig nothing equals quote not at all end quote. isBig open paren just one close paren equals quote just perfect end quote. And isBig open paren just n close paren equals if n is less than 10, then quote just lightly end quote, else quote definitely is end quote. So we have three cases. Nothing, that is covered by the isBig nothing equals, and that will that will be handle the case when you call this with nothing. Then there's a isPig just one. This will handle the specific case when we are calling this file, and the parameter is just one. And then there's a more general case isPig just n. This will match the case that we are it will match all the rest cases. So n will capture the value that was given to the just, and it will be available as a named parameter, named value inside of the function. And order where you define these is important. If we had that two of these last ones switch places, we would define just n before the case of just one, then the just n would trigger when we expected the just one to trigger. So the program will go functions through them in order to find which one is the first one that matches. So this was an example how to do it, how to match to some malware constructor and capture data that was used constructing that data into a parameter. So isPig open paren just n close paren equals, and then the definition. The pattern matching isn't limited to algebraic data types, those examples that we went through before earlier, but it works for records too. Records is a data type where we have one value constructor, and then there's one or more records with fields with names. So if you haven't been following the show notes, now it would be a good time because this might be a tricky to follow. But to declare our record, we would, for example, this could be a customer record. It would be a data customer equals customer. Open bracket, curly bracket. Customer name, double colon string, comma, customer discount percent, double colon, comma, VIP customer, double colon bool, close curly bracket. So now we have a type customer that has one value constructor, also called customer, that has three fields. Customer name, that is string, customer discount percent, that is double, and VIP customer, that is bool. So whenever we have a customer, we know that it has these three values available. Then we have a function called total fee. This is a made up example that calculates what a total fee is based on the cost and the discount percentage. First, we have a special case, total fee, bill, cost, et, open paren, customer, open curly bracket, VIP customer equals true, close curly bracket, close paren equals. And then inside of the definition, bill times 0.9 times customer discount percent cost. So there's a lot of going on here. So the total fee is taking two parameters. First one, bill, is a double. Second one, customer, we are matching that to a case where the VIP customer record is true. If that field is false, this definition won't get called. So this one will only be called when the VIP customer is set to true. And then we are using that cost et at the beginning to capture the value of the customer into the parameter named cost. And then we can use those values inside of the function to multiply the bill first by 0.9% because it's a VIP customer, and then by the personal discount percentage. Regular case for the function is defined as a total fee bill cost equals bill times customer discount percent cost, meaning that if the VIP customer is false, this will get called, and we are going to just multiply the bill by the discount percentage. There's no extra discount that is given to the VIP customers. Okay, then there's a bit special case, lists. They can be pattern matched too. I think I showed this, I used this when I was talking about recursion way back, but didn't explain that closely. So we can have where we were doing the matching the customer, for example, or the value constructors of the Boolean, we can match in the same way lists. And the syntax is that if you have a list of at least one item that you want to match, you just write it as a open paren x colon xs close paren. The names of variables aren't important. What is important is that colon in the definition. So in this case, x will be the first item of the list and xs will be the rest of the list. There might be a zero items there, then it's an empty list, or there might be a who knows how many items there, but it's a list. If you wanted to match a list that has at least two items, we could write it as a open paren x colon y colon underscore close paren. Now x is a first item, y is the second item, and that underscore is the rest of the items. But we are not interested in using those, so we are matching them with the underscore. That's a wildcard that matches anything, but it doesn't bind it into the name. Now we have access only the two first items of the list, and the rest we cannot access. And of course, if you want to match completely empty list, there's a open bracket, close bracket that matches an empty list. So list of exactly one item would be a open paren x colon open bracket, close bracket, close paren. Because now we are matching a first it matches to a one item, and then it matches to the empty list. So list where there's a head and the tail is empty list. And like I said, the underscore matches to everything, but it doesn't bind the value to a name. And where I tend to use this is when I need to match, where I don't care value of something, then I'm using underscore. I could equally use some made-up name there, like n or anything. But then if I'm not using that name in the function, then the compiler will issue me a warning that you have a value that is not being used. And I think that's a good idea, because that might catch some bugs or thought errors or what you call those. So I try to only declare variables or values that I actually need, and if there's something that I don't need, I use underscore to match it. So for example, we could use that list matching to count how many items there are in the list, and we would define that as the signature would be count double colon open bracket a close bracket arrow int. And this means that our count function takes a list of anything, hence the lowercase a, and returns an int. This one can take list of integers, list of strings, list of booleans, list of anything. And the definition for this one is count open bracket close bracket equals zero. So when we call our count with an empty list, it returns zero. And then general case count open paren x colon xs close paren equals one plus count xs. So what this does is that it takes the first element of our list and then takes the count of the rest of the list and adds one to that. So it will call count again and again and again until it reaches a point where empty list is handed to it, and it, in that case it returns zero, and then it will add up all those ones together. So this is one way of counting elements on a list. You can also do a common example is a Fibonacci. That's a sequence of numbers where every number is defined as a sum of two previous numbers. And the first two ones are 0 and 1. So the sequence goes something like 0, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, and so on. And we can have it as a different as following. We have a signature, Fibonacci, double colon, int, arrow, int. So you give int and you get int back. And then the actual definition is Fibonacci 0 equals 0. Fibonacci 1 equals 1. These are the two first numbers. So when you call it with a 0, you get a 0, and when you call it with a 1, you get a 1. And then there's a general case Fibonacci n equals Fibonacci n minus 1 plus Fibonacci n minus 2. So when you call it with any other number, that a number that is a 0 or 1, it goes to this general case and calls itself twice and adds up the numbers together. Here's a slight problem that if you call it with, for example, minus 1, it will never ever terminate. It will just run until you exceed the range of the integers. When you get a big enough numbers, that it will issue a runtime error. But here there's a problem that if you call it with a negative number, it will keep running. But with positive numbers, this one works. And well, so far we have been doing pattern matching on function parameters. There's a case expression that does the same thing, but inside of a function. But the rules for that are exactly same. You can do exactly same pattern matching tricks that was shown above or earlier, but with inside of functions. For example, if we wanted to define our Fibonacci using the case, it would the signature would still be the same, but the definition would be Fibonacci n equals case n of 0, arrow 0, 1, arrow 1, n arrow Fibonacci n minus 1 plus Fibonacci n minus 2. And that's it. So the case expression works in a way that there's a case, what you're matching against, of, and then the matches underneath. And after every match, there's an arrow with a value that that case will produce. And even here, if you miss a case, the compiler will helpfully complain to you that this match isn't exhaustive. For example, if we forgot the last case of the Fibonacci example and match it only to the 0 and 1, the compiler would say that you are missing the, I don't actually remember exact wording, but it would say that you are missing a case where you that is different than 0 and 1, which is pretty handy that it even detects that you are not matching to all integers. So the advantages of this is that you can remove if statements. That, well, that's a subjective maybe, but I like that there's a the less there's an if statement, the better, in my opinion, because I mean you need to do the choices, but every time you have a if statement, it adds a brand, and then you have a, for example, if you have a two consecutive if statements in your code, that means that there's a four patch through that code, and if you have three, then you have a eight patch through that code, and it gets really complicated to figure out what's going on and how everything plays together. Having those in the pattern matching doesn't remove the complexity, but it makes it linear. It's easier to see that in this case we are doing exactly these things. Another advantage is that compiler will help you to catch the cases where you missed a match. That there's a case that you haven't handled. Okay, that's all about this. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, they're welcome. The best way to catch me is nowadays either email or in Fediverse, where I'm tutur@master.social. Catch you later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.